Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is a wonderful Friday. And how you guys doing? It's a wonderful Friday and we are chilling and on cruise control as we do on Fridays. So, ladies and gentlemen, today we're talking about our shortcomings. We're talking about our shortcomings. We're talking about the bad, right? And we're not talking about the bad from the perspective of, yeah, we must change this and it's going to be great and it's going to be amazing. And after that, we're going to do even greater things and it's going to be wow. No, we're talking about a specific reason that people do what they do and how they do what they do. Now, recently, there has been a movement about dad wounds and mother wounds. Now, these types of wounds, ladies and gentlemen, are wounds that are caused by parents. And they're caused by parents, not because it was intentional. I can assume that it's not intentional. Because nobody says that, oh, you know what, I just feel like hurting that 2-year-old's feelings. Or I feel like hurting that 1-year-old's feelings. No. It is never intentional, the hurt that they inflict on us. Except for physical abuse, emotional, like, except for abusive situations, right? If they know it's abuse. If they know. Because sometimes, right, this is a pattern that has been carried over from generation to generation. And it is expected that it just continues because, I mean, yeah, like, yeah, my father used to do it. Yeah, my grandfather also used to do it to my father. So we're also going to just continue the cycle. So part of this cycle with the mother issues and the father issues is the issues that are lingering within us. Right? It depends on what type of person you are and where you come from and how you heal from something and if you know that you need to heal from this. We're talking about this conversation because I've noticed that everybody, I feel like our parents think that they did a great job and we blame them for every single mistake in our lives or every single shortcoming in our lives. I feel like our parents think they did a better job than their parents did. But the truth is that, like, we don't see it that way. But there are things that they changed, you know. For example, I use my mom as an example a lot, but she's the only mother I have, so I can't really use another person's mother as an example. My mother is not a beater. She doesn't beat you. So if you are trying to discipline a child and you don't beat, what mode of discipline are you going to use? Think about it. Think about it. Long and hard, ne? Think about it. Intentionally or unintentionally. And the reason that she doesn't beat is because she had a mother that had a short temper for days. A short temper for days. The type of lady that will just break your arm, you know, biological child and everything, and she'll just chop like hach. The type of auntie that if you are crossing her, she'll just pick up a katana and just throw it. And you know, it's insightful. It's pleasant to hear. And to understand, right? Or pleasant to hear and to know. But what really trickled down on me today, right? Because we had a conversation today and the conversation didn't go the way I wanted it to go. Also because I'm so overstimulated. I'm so exhausted. I'm just, and it's also not like it's not the days that I like the most in the month, you know, because this means extra work and extra pushing and extra what and extra what, you know, it's not a very relaxed time for me. So, we had this conversation. The conversation was around, so there are men and women out there that can just go about their lives and never think of their children, like at all. Just never think of their children. Not unless somebody says that, oh, do you guys have kids? Then you say yes, but that's as far as it goes. And when we say talking about, when we say children, right? Or thinking about your children, meaning that 3 years can go by and you have not given this child a dollar. You have not bought or contributed to anything at all in this child's life. Nothing. Nothing at all. No shoes, not even a lollipop. Nothing at all. And my argument was that we can't explain why people do the things that they do. Because in reality, everybody is living their own story. Everybody's living their own story. And although some of our wounds look similar, they are not similar because we are different. So the way you hurt is not the way I hurt. And the way you see things is not the way I see things. It's okay for us to have conversation and then we bring it to the table. But at the end of the day, your mindset is your mindset and my mindset is my mindset. So just think about that.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia reminds all registered voters, November 26, 2025 is the day to cast your vote. Head to the polls and exercise your democratic right by voting. Your vote is your voice, so put your voice in the box to make sure it's heard. Vote on November 26, 2025.
Waza, vote, guys, November 2025. So good evening to you. My name is The Matriarch and I am running the show. And ladies and gentlemen, the number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio. And today we are basically ranting, right? We are ranting and we are talking about world-class phenomenons. And the phenomenon for today is mother wounds and father wounds. And these are parental wounds, right? Now, my theory is that every single parent thinks that they are doing better than their parents because we are fighting the battle of being better than them because we know their flaws. So when you know your parents' flaws, when you know Kucha, oh, mother dearest, right, was terrible at this, and you try your level best to not be terrible at that, because somewhere, somehow, within your childhood or within your childhood, this particular thing hurt your feelings. So let's go with sports parents. Sports parents. I can say that I've never had a parent at any of my sports. I've never had a parent. I've never had anyone come and watch me at my sports ever. And I've been playing sports since I was a child. I think the one event that my mom had come to was my kindergarten graduation. You know, that we all run on the stage with our little graduation gowns. I think, yeah, for that one, I know for a fact she was there, because the highlight of our lives has always been my little cousin's blunder. You know, she was so excited. She had one line in the play, one line, and she was supposed to say yellow. Right? And she just goes wild and she just feels everybody is taking long. And by the time it got to her, Olga, before the teacher can even say, what color is this? Oh, she's just blue. And that has been the highlight. So whatever I did that day was not significant because it's not remembered. Nothing. Nothing's remembered. And okay, so sports parents, children that play sports. And I'm speaking from a sports parent perspective as well, but I'm also speaking from an entrepreneur's perspective. You know, I'm living in the modern dream where unfortunately you can't just be at Eagle FM only, you know, not unless, right? That's what you want. But in order to broaden your horizons, you need another business. You need a side hustle. You need a business. You need what? So that's my life, right? I'm pushing and I'm running. And, you know, I've always felt bad about it because I also come from Caucasian schools. And in Caucasian schools, I don't know what the conversation was in their households, right? But it was, they come out in unison, in uniform and holistically. They come out as a unit, as a conglomerate, as a team. So I'm surrounded by other little girls and boys that have support systems, right? But I didn't have one. I didn't have the whole, your parent is standing on the pavilion and they are screaming, right? They're screaming for you to run faster. Yay! Or for you to play better. Yay! Or you are excellent. There was no applause. There was no audience, right? And this used to get me mad. This used to get me riled up, and it was something that I kept for a very long time. I associated it to abandonment. I'm just like, I'm alone. I don't have a family. And I think that, part of these experiences, right, are the ones that had gone now to mold me into this fragile, head bent, you know, perfectionist kind of person that is just pushing, you know. I can even say that I can associate aggressiveness and I can associate maybe anger, you know, towards my character. I'm full of love, right? But many a times you actually have to get to know me first in order for you to see it. And you have to get to know me in all my vulnerable states, and you have to see me in my true essence. So that means, right, you need time with me. That's what you need. If you want to get to, you need time. Because if you find me on a normal day, you're going to run. On a normal day where I'm just ranting, you are going to run. Do you know how many people on this platform, right, have told me that at first they didn't like me? And it's true, you know, I get it. I get why they didn't like me at first, because it's annoying. It's annoying to have somebody so out there like that, you know. And also, maybe many of those that didn't know, that didn't like me at first, right? Their argument was that, or maybe their argument is, or was that, I was speaking a whole lot of things that they don't want to hear because they are not ready for it. And they feel it. It is true inside your heart. Mm. So I was always singular. And, eventually, my friend's family was extremely supportive, and it wasn't my other friend's family. My other friend's family was not supportive. Not unless we're just being picked up. Like we get picked up and we get dropped off. That was her mom's role, but never to stay, never to cheer us on, never. And this was a world champion netball player, and she never came to watch a game. Like, wow. Like, I'm telling you. And I associated it with the dynamics of her house, because her dad was a minister. So I assumed, like, oh, there's a busy schedule, and, you know, maybe like a minister's wife, mafia life, you know, what if the paparazzi comes and gets, I associated it to that. So we've always had, my middle friend, Uka bestie, we've always had her family come through. So occasionally, right? Occasionally UB would come through, and occasionally Kameka would come through. So those were the people that would come like to our sports and now and then, but 90% of the time, or if it's a lot, let's say 80% of the time, we were alone. The three of us, we were alone. And that's the whole of primary school and high school. It's like just us, the three of us. We cheer each other on, and it's very difficult to cheer each other on when you guys are in the same game, you know? So it's kind of off. So with this, right, I was extremely hurt. I was extremely hurt growing up about this. Like, this was something that hurt my feelings, especially with the fact that I left my mom sleeping. You know, I leave my mana sleeping. Like, why don't you just get up and we go to the sports together? Like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you, bruh? And I would leave her sleeping. And it would make me so mad. So she would compensate, right? With $100. She'd compensate with $100. And for a moment, I'd forget. Up until some point, I would be triggered. Most probably triggered by, you know, athletics. When you guys are running and then somebody's parent is there at the finish line. Oh, like, yo, guys, support your kids. Support your kids. Then somebody's parent is at the finish line and they, you know, when you run fast, when you run fast and sometimes you can't just slow down and then your dad catches you. Like, yeah, I don't know what that is. Or you run fast and then your mom catches you. Nah, no, I don't know that one. Yeah, I don't know. Don't know. But I think that, at that point, like I said, we had teachers that came through for us on parental levels. And now that I'm an adult, to some degree, I fully understand both narratives. I understand both sides. And I think it's because I took so much time trying to fix pieces of myself and trying to fix pieces of myself that were so angry and so heartbroken and so fragile. So there are pieces that I fixed, and I fixed them through understanding, because you can't fight something you don't understand, right? So eventually I became an adult. So for me, that was the whole running thing, that was angering, and the relay, everything was bad because I was doing everything by myself. And if my friends were also inside the activities, there was not really cheering on. So you just have to push with your own strength. You know, you tell yourself, you know, you want to cry there by short put, you want to cry a little bit, but then you turn around and then you're like, you know, you got this, LZ, you got this. My little name throughout my childhood and etc. has always been LZ. E-L-Z-Y. LZ. Yeah. You know? And up until today, it's just a particular family that calls me that. It's wonderful, if I may say so myself. So, with this, right? I then grew up. So I went through the whole sports things, you know, sports, athletics, all of it. I went through all of it. And then when I did eventually become an adult, and then I became a parent, right? I have an older son. Yeah. I say older because the small one is 2 and the other small one is 9. So he's the oldest. So. With her, the kucha with him, he's a natural born athlete. There's no sports he's not good at. He's very much like his mother, you know, cause I basically played everything. I don't know if we were killing time, do not go home, or I don't know what it was, right? But we basically played everything. And my younger sister also went into the same field, I can say. Or same activities as I did. It's only that I never took it up as anything professional. It was just something that I was doing, that I was good at, that I was doing in primary and high school, and a little bit in varsity. And then I was like, nah, I'm not about to be coming from home. Hey, I'm already tired and these classes are beating me. And I'm supposed to be coming from netball practice. Things are no see going in career. We're not doing that. So. Then I have most now my son that's a natural born athlete. And you know, when you have a child, right? It seems like the whole world shifts. And part of my things, or part of my goals that I had put down, was that I'm gonna support my child. You know, if my child does sports and stuff, I'm gonna support my child. I'm gonna go to every match and I'm gonna go to every activity and I'm gonna be like a true soccer mom and I'm gonna do all of that. Why? Because my mom didn't do it. And I know how it feels like to not have your parent there. That's what I told myself. And then I had my child. And then after I had my child, then the poverty struck. And that poverty, right? When you have a child, there's something that shifts. If you are a genuine parent, right? A parent, and I don't say mother, I mean parent. When you have a child, there's something that shifts within you. You realize that it is time to cut the nonsense. It is time to grow up. It is time to fend. At that point, you're like, yo, let's just get the ball rolling. You understand? So that's exactly what happened to me. So I started working. I started working on myself so that I can maybe just maybe be a better parent. And there are so many things that I worked on. Hey, there are so many things that I worked on that I'm proud of today. So many, so many. I was so angry. I was so bitter. I was many, many things, right? I was so emotional. I was so happy, frantic, whatever. I was a drunk, you know, and I was anxious and I was depressed and it's all just a mess, right? And then I found a way to get out of this. You know, I found a way to beat my addiction. I found a way to become useful for myself, for my child, for my family, for society. I found a way to find a place within society that also made me happy and also gave me a sense of belonging, right? But as time went on, the first years were okay, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4, they were perfectly fine. And then there at 4.5 and 5, right? I had to really start pushing because now I have to have expenses and I've got this and I've got that and I've got this. And then I want my child to experience good things. So that means I'd have to work extra harder. I'd have to push, but working extra harder and pushing, right? There's a downside to it and it's silent and it's time. Time. 90% of the time you are exhausted out of your mind. You can't afford to take a holiday because how are the bills going to be paid? You can't do anything except work. You can't do anything. And even when the money comes in, right, you have to compensate your children for your absence. And It used to make me cry that I don't spend so much time with them. I feel like they barely knew me because I was always in and out. And then sports activities came. So we went to grade 1 eventually. And then sports activities came and athletics and stuff came. And on each and every one of these days, right, I was caught up. Every single one of them, I was caught up. I would say I would go and then last minute I would change. And on the days that I'm not caught up, I can barely get out of bed. I'm so tired. So what did I become? I became the give the $100 parent. So I would instruct my younger sister to take the children, you know, to the athletics and make them happy. And then on other days where I want to rest and I just want to calm down a little bit, I'd give them money and then they go to Spur or they go to Panarottis, Wimpy. They go and have a good time with auntie. And it is today that I'm like, am I not the same?
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low. Because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And right now, I was like, am I not the same? Am I not the same as the parent that I once resent for doing the exact same thing? Now, the only difference between the two of us is that she wasn't sending auntie, you know, to come, to go and entertain us. But we had representatives that were already taking us, so we were always safe. So it's exactly the same thing. Now, the question that I have is that, am I not then, doing the same thing that once hurt me? Am I not in those shoes as well? Am I not causing childhood trauma with all this, this mom life, this entrepreneur life, this having a different life outside of your children, you know? And it saddened me because the truth is that yes, I am. I am. I might be. Because you can see from the sigh, you know, because I know the sigh very well because I lived the sigh. I see the sigh in my son, like, oh, are you going to come, mommy? And I'm like, you know, I got to work. And he's like, okay, you know, and it's like, okay. And it's sad. And also, you know, I'm finding so much leniency with my mother. You know, they say that we must look at people's parents, or you must look at your parents and know that you are going to be just like your parents when you grow. And I'm not too fond of the idea, but now when I look at certain chapters of my life, I see my mother. I see my mother in it. And some I'm glad, some I'm not really happy about. Some I'm glad, some I'm not really happy about. Because you're allowed to dislike a few qualities and a few traits, you know. Especially, it's your mom, man. You're allowed to. What's gonna happen? And the more we are aging, or the more I'm aging in particular, I'm seeing a lot of my mother's sacrifices, right? I always thought I understood the sacrifices. But I now understand why, I now fully understand to its full magnitude, holistically and everything, the bond between a grandchild and a grandparent. I've always said, you are the common denominator. You are the person, right, that they both hate, and that's why they love each other so much. Because you are the one that's saying, like, no, it's time for bed. And they are both like, yeah, but 10 more minutes. Both of them. Your mother that used to tell you, like, your mother used to beat you for even sighing at 8 o'clock. You know, like, you get beaten for sighing. And now all of a sudden she's also asking for extra time, and your bedtime has even shifted from 8 to 9. Your kids go to bed at 9, you know, more hours for playing, and still you're the villain. I get it. I get why the grandchild and the grandparent has such a great bond, because the grandparent, right, is rectifying all lost things. The grandparent is fixing a relationship. The grandparent is working on a relationship. The grandparent is slowly but surely becoming the most important, the single most important person in your child's life. Because the grandparent, especially when the grandparent becomes retired, right? The grandparent has time. Time she didn't have for her own children. But she has time for her children's children, right? And you're like, yeah, but these people are strangers. You only know them for 10 years. You know me for 34 years, but you have never done the things like, I was working. And I'm understanding. I'm starting to understand. And that it's deep, you know? And so now my mom is absolutely okay with, let's go pick up the kids. Yeah. Absolutely exciting. I'm like, yo, brah, like, tone it down a notch. Like, what's up? just picking up the kids. It's not that deep. Every Friday she's like, are they coming to over to Coco's house? I'm like, no, they're also just at their own house. Like you taught me. Like, be comfortable in your own house. Like you taught me. Yeah? Even when I wanted to go to my grandmother, you said, be comfortable in your own house. And now, when my kids want to come to you, it's not a problem. They shouldn't be comfortable in their own house. Like, oh, the double standards. The double standards that are going. And I'm looking at everything. I'm really honestly looking at everything so holistically. And I see the good and I see the bad and I see the wounds, right? I see the wounds. And my question would be that, do we then ever stop leading? And as long as the dynamics, right? For example, with a sports narrative, for you guys that have super extra effort for your children's activities, extramural activities, I'm so proud of you. I know it's not easy. I know it's not easy. And you prioritize that. And I'm proud of you for doing that. And for us that are slacking, because for us that are slacking for whatever reason, whether it is neglect or it is really just lack of time, it can't be poor planning, because if your boss is saying that there's a meeting right now, like, you cannot tell your boss that I'm going to a cricket match. My son is playing cricket. I have to go. No. The best you can do is go half day at the tennis match and then watch him. And I go sometimes, right? And it, like, there's so much running from the parents, ne? We are so invested in those little games, and the people are all getting medallions, and everybody's the best player, and everybody's great, right? But we're so invested. I didn't even understand tennis, but the way I was running from one end to another, I was a real, like, yo, I'm real when I'm there, right? And now this leads me to tonight's conversation. This childhood trauma that we are experiencing, or that we have experienced, right? And what is it? Now, many of us look at trauma as a horrific accident that happened, or a horrific bad thing that happened. And that's why some people think that they are not traumatized, or they are not affected by things that were done, not done, said, not said, activities that were supposed to be had and they were not had, and activities that were not supposed to be had and they were had. Many of us want to walk around and say that there was nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with our childhoods, except the one big event that was catastrophic and everything else was smooth sailing. And I beg to differ. I beg to differ, because everything in our whole entire existence, right, is linked. All of it. It's linked to the way you talk, the way you walk, the way you reason. How you display yourself. Like, there are certain bad qualities within our parents that we hate, right? And as we start to age, we do exactly that, because we possess their DNA. And some of these things, right, are generational. Like, with my mom is not accountable at all. She's not accountable for nothing. Like, no, she's nothing. Not unless it's something small. But if it really hurts you, then she's not accountable. But if it's something small, like she slams the door and it hits you, she'll say sorry. If maybe she spilled some tea on you, she'll say sorry. If it's something that is not important, she'll say sorry. But for important things, she can't say sorry. She can't say sorry. And that is a habit that I was trying to break away from. But with me, it wasn't from the perspective of, I'm not going to say sorry. For me, it was, I'm just going to try and be perfect so that I never have to say sorry, because I'll do everything right. Then I'll never have to say sorry, and I'll never have to apologize to anybody, because I'm perfect. right? Now, look at how twisted that is. Just think about it. Like, what kind of psycho is that? Just think about it. I'm just going to do everything perfectly. Just close your eyes. Close your eyes, ladies and gentlemen. Close your eyes for a minute. And then listen to my voice. I'm just going to do everything perfectly so that I never have to apologize to anybody. So that I never have to say sorry for anything because I'm perfect. So I'm just going to be perfect. So everything I'm going to double think it twice before I do it, before I say it, before I move it, before anything, so that nobody ever has a reason to be angry with me because I did something wrong. So I must be perfect. So now you open your eyes and you're like, whoa. Like, no, you don't really have to. You don't really have to be perfect, matriarch. It's all good. It's just a game. Like, yeah, but I've got to be the best. Like, you don't have to be the best. You just have to do your best. Like, yeah, doing my best is the best, and then I'm the best. Like, no. No. And with the not saying sorry, right? It was something that bothered me a lot. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, I'm turning to my mother. And this is like a realization here that I'm having. But I also realize that some of these things are generational wounds. These are generational wounds. Because you cannot have an entire family of people that find it extremely difficult to apologize to one another. And to really see the magnitude of things. To really see the magnitude, excuse me, of things. You know? And also, also part of the bad habits that is there is that, the leverage, you know, seeking leverage. So I have leverage over you. And when I have leverage over you, right, you're not allowed to mess up. So my mom would give a thief money, right? Give a thief money, and then the thief does what the thief does and steals the money or chops the money, right? So that she has a reason to. It's like a trap. It's like a trap. She traps you into things. Yeah. So today I'm just ranting, but mostly I'm talking about emotional trauma. We all think that trauma is this big event that happens and it's something that's there. But truth is, it's also in the little things, like where you're not traumatized at being, where you're not, there's PTSD and then there's CPTSD. CPTSD is when a form of abuse goes on over a long period of time. And many of us have CPTSD, where it's not one traumatic experience, it's a series of bad experiences that we have had that now have a tendency of affecting and shaping our lives at the end of the day. With post-traumatic stress disorder is going into a car accident, for example. And then after that, it's just a nightmare after a nightmare after a nightmare. You can't really escape the car accident. And you have now a phobia of cars, driving fast, driving in the rain, driving in the desert, driving next to the ocean. You've got fears for cars. Or war, for example. War also causes some PTSD. Where sometimes, occasionally with veterans, they can smell burning flesh occasionally. Sometimes they can taste blood in their mouth. Sometimes they can hear gunshots. Sometimes they can hear people walking, you know, like they're coming to ambush. They can hear people walking their direction. Sometimes they have nightmares and night terrors of reliving the war experience, right? And that's PTSD. And then we have CPTSD. And this one is now a series of bad things that happen that somewhere, somehow, they just give you that tipping point and then you are broken. You are broken, you're broken, you're broken. And it's such a bad thing to be broken, because if it's a lifelong series of events that have hurt you, then it would also be logical to assume that, that your quest on finding happiness and solace is also a quest that might also take a lifetime. Or if it doesn't take a lifetime, it might take a chunk of your life just working on it, undoing things that were done by you, to you, from you, intentionally, unintentionally, and it was done. So when other people say things like, when other people say, I'm so traumatized, when people say that, oh, I had a traumatic experience, when other people say that I've had a traumatic love life, I've had a traumatic childhood, don't give an answer saying that I didn't have a traumatic, I was not traumatized, I don't have any traumas. Because even the way you answer is a result of trauma. Even the way you talk is a result of where you come from. Everything that you are is a result of something that had happened, be it good, be it bad. It's experiences that shape you. So you might be a happy-go-lucky kind of person. You're always happy and you're always smiling. But the truth is, you're always happy and you're always smiling because you've always had to be the equalizer. You've had to be the balancer your whole entire life. You had to be the one that cracks the ice in the household. You know, when elders fight, you crack the ice with your cuteness or your wittiness or your clumsiness. But you've always had to be the middle person. So maybe your funness was a result of pain. Or maybe you're mad, or you're always mad, right? Because in your household, nobody allowed you to talk. Because every time you said anything, somebody was very quick to shut you down. It's like everybody was just waiting at your door. Every time you open it, they shut it. Every time they open it, they shut it. So now you are maybe very timid. You don't talk much, or maybe you talk way too much, or maybe you just don't like expressing yourself because of the fear of being laughed at. Whatever fears you might have, but it's all there. Maybe you are spoiled, right? Because you had a parent that was overcompensating. Maybe you are extremely bad-mannered because your mom was never there. Your mom was never there, and when your mom was there, she's a tyrant. She's strict. She's shouting. She's beating. You know, you guys must do the correct things. You guys must not give people a headache here. Do you know how much I work? Do you know how much I work? Do you know how much I just want to be at home sleeping, but I cannot because I'm working for you guys? And you feel guilty because somebody is telling you that the only reason that they are tired and not living their best lives, right, is because you are in existence. It's about interpretation. How we interpret what is said, how we take in what is said, and why we take in what is said. All of these form our essence. All of it form our character and our personality. And even you saying, I never want to be like my father, right? He doesn't like his kids. Me, I'm always going to be there for my kids. Even you saying that, right, is a result of somebody's actions or the lack thereof. So you're not out here creating your own life. You are only going to start creating your own life when you see patterns within yourself that you need to change and you work on them. I appreciate those that want to speak. I appreciate those that want to speak properly. Properly. I appreciate those that make environments conducive. I appreciate those that ask questions about you. And not ask questions about you, but not interrogate you, but really honestly ask a question about you. You know, You guys sit at a nice place. And, or even at home, right? Because home is a nice place. And you guys have a cup of coffee and you guys are sitting out there, probably sharing a cigarette. And you ask, what was the most painful memory you have? What is the most painful memory you have? And hear the answer. But these kinds of questions are questions for people that intend to stick around long enough. You know, it's not all of us that have the capability of sharing. It's not everything that was bad, right? But sometimes when you are taught that you should not shine, you often like putting others in the spotlight. So you glorify other people, but you don't glorify yourself. No matter how amazing and dope you are, you don't glorify yourself. So we're talking about mother wounds. We're talking about father wounds. We can't categorize our relationships with our parents in one box because they were not perfect and they were not great. And neither were their parents and neither were their parents before them. It is a matter of truly understanding somebody's psychology to determine why they do what they do when they do what they do. And I think that that's why I'm so fascinated by psychology. I'm fascinated because I want people to make sense to me. I want to understand. I want you, right? I want you to make sense for me. Because if I'm looking at you on a blank canvas, right? I won't be able to understand you, and not being able to understand you would frustrate me. And like I said, I don't want to be frustrated. So I would rather understand you. I'd rather understand why you fancy, right, older women. Why are you stimulated by older women? A young man such as yourself, and you only date grannies. What issues do you have? And you're not ugly either. You just date grannies. Like, why are you dating ancestors? I want to understand. I'm not trying to judge you. I'm trying to understand. And in order for me to understand why you are dating ancestors, I need to ask you questions. I need to know. So, where did you grow up? I grew up with my mom and my dad. I was like, oh, okay. How old is your mom? No, my mom is older than my dad, like by 20 years. I'm like, oh. I know I said I'm not judging, but you know, I'm like, okay. All right. So it starts to make a little bit more sense. If we can understand that everything we are is because of where we come from, right? We can understand to some degree where we are going. If you think, right, that your parent is such a terrible parent, and they're going to die alone because they're so bad, right? I can tell you now that 80% of what your parent is what you're going to be. Especially if you take after one parent. Sometimes, right, God just punishes our kids and gives them all the worst characters, all the worst traits in us, right? Which are, just take this. Everything that we don't like about ourselves, right, comes through our children. Like, I'm so chatty. Like, I talk so much. You know, prior to having kids, right, I was a person that could socialize. Like, really, honestly, socialize. I can have a conversation with anybody. I can have full-blown conversations with anybody. And right now, I'm in the era where I'm going to learn to keep quiet. I'm going to learn to keep quiet and let whatever sounds are going around there fade. Sometimes I can't help it, right? Sometimes I can't help it. Like today, there was a young girl. Today, I went to court. So there's a young girl that came in, right? And she wanted to see somebody in one of the offices. And she had a particular question. But you could see that she was annoyed. And I'm like, yo, Kale, shoo. And I'm reading this energy and I'm like, I'm not going to participate. Because on a normal day, what matriarch does is ask you what's wrong.
Bruh, I'm tired.
I'm tired. I'm not asking nobody what's wrong. We're just going to keep quiet and we're going to do what we came here to do and leave. Right? But no, the ancestor in me that's chatty will not allow that. We eventually will start asking because our purpose here on earth is to help. My purpose is the matriarch is to heal. That is what I'm here to do, to heal. So if I'm going to heal with my hands, I'll heal with my hands. If I'm going to heal with my voice, I'll heal with my voice. If I'm going to heal with my mind, I'll heal with my mind. And if I'm going to heal with my spirit, I'll heal with my spirit. But I'm here to assist. I'm an assistant. So I'm assisting. And I also need assistance. So you guys are also my assistants. So we assist one another. So I'm trying by all means to resist this, right? And then she comes to the side and she's like, oh, do you know, like, so are you guys going in? Yeah. Now we are all in a queue, right? And we're going into this office in front of us. And she's like, are you guys also going to go in? Because me, I only have a small thing to ask. And I'm keeping quiet. And then the auntie on the other side of me, because now it's like a sandwich, right? Now I'm in the middle. I don't even know why I picked that middle spot. I don't know. I picked the middle spot, but I was regretting it later because now they're talking over me and, oh, something's bound to catch me, right? Something is bound to catch me. It's bound to catch me. And I'm trying my level best because I don't want to talk anymore. I don't want to talk anymore. I'm tired. And I'm not saying that in the ancestors, when I strike my voice, my vocal cords, and then I just become mute. No, I don't mean it like that. I just mean that I'm tired of having so much conversation outside. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I just want to keep quiet a little bit more. Please. And always not participating, please. You know, that's basically what I'm saying. So they start talking, right? And I know a lot, right? I also know a lot. So this girl is looking for assistance. She's looking for assistance. She wants to know what she should do to her grandmother that ate up her money. And her grandmother is denying it. You know, she's supposed to go to the police station for this, but, right? Okay. We're here now. So, and I'm quiet. And eventually I step in, right? Because she's derailing herself all the way. And by the time that person that was coming to assist her came, she was not talking properly. And also in between her story, because she's young, she wanted to lie. So I was like, sit down. I was like, sit down. Listen, you're going to tell these people the truth. You're going to tell the people that, listen, your grandmother ate up your money that was sent by your dad. Yeah. Because your dad has been responsible for paying your child support. Right. And yes, you are young, but you're in varsity. And that is why he is continuing with the payments because you are in varsity and you live alone. But with his consent. Yeah. Because your dad knows where he is, right? Your dad wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't still be sending. Not unless also, but don't worry about it. And we had the conversation and there was a lot of talking. And I watched so many people with wounds today. And that's why I just wanted to have a little moment. You know, I wanted to have a full hour when I'm just ranting and I'm just talking about it and just to put it out there in the air. So if you're feeling some type of way, if you don't understand yourself a lot, if you know yourself, but you don't understand yourself, right? Then conversations such as this one, These are conversations that you must highlight. You are not the way you are simply because. Everything that you see in your parents that you like and you don't like, those are your qualities in a couple of years. Because we do turn into our parents, or we try our best. We do turn into our parents. And even if we are saying that, yeah, I don't want to be like my parents, or I don't want to be like my parent, the truth is, they are not all bad. They have great qualities. Imagine you're going to inherit the great qualities as well. And then you're also going to inherit the bad qualities because it's part of the package. You know, different children have different stands. So I always thought that I was more composed and chilled, right? And I'm 2 years old when I realized that But I iteka in English. So I don't do it the Ndonga way where, no, I do it in English. I throw a tantrum in English, you know? I iteka in English. So I iteka in private school. So my itekaring, right, is I remain angry. I remain angry until I feel better. But isn't that detrimental then? Isn't that something that's damaging to the heart? Wouldn't you say, listener? 0832-888-401, that's the number in studio, and yes, we're live. But isn't it detrimental? And I realized that I do it, Teka. It's just not in the traditional way. It's not in the Ndonga way, but if we look at everything here, yeah, I can decide that I don't want chukul drink. It's fine, you know? Like you made your bed, lay in it. I don't want to do that. Like if we look at it in practicality. And this is a quality that my mom has, right? And a quality that her mom had. And the few relatives that I know. Most of the girls have it. Except for Penny Tambukeni. Tambukeni and my older brother. My older brother is a person that I'm not fond of, but he has no sense of, he gives sorry. Whether he means it or he doesn't, he gives it willingly. Mina, I have to mean it. I have to mean it. Yeah, everything of mine must be meant and it must be, yeah, it must be wonderful and beautifully made and all of that. And he doesn't have this thing of, I'll never see you again, or I will never come there again, or I'll never, like, he doesn't have that. But me, I can go for 10 years without talking to you, my friend. Like, I'm done. Like, yeah. I can walk away. I don't want to be an old lady. Eat, take, huh? What will I eat? Ngerandi take. Ah, like, yo, I don't want that. Right? So, I'm talking about this because there's such a broad spectrum, and you know, the terms are being coined now because it used to be abandonment issues and daddy issues and mama issues. Yeah, like I get it, but it's not issues, it's wounds, and it's wounds that were created. And, there's a profound statement that I heard yesterday when I was listening to a podcast, right? The psychologist said that they are a woman that has a problem with another woman has deep issues with their mother. And I'm like, how so? Because somewhere in the chain of mother and daughterhood, there was jealousy, where mother, what did they call it? The fury something, something. I don't know. It starts with an F, but I'll look for it. Where the mother feels jealous of the daughter as she ages. You know, where It's either she becomes more attractive or, I don't know, she becomes accomplished or something. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Cause I don't have that. Me, I love, I'm for the women, guys. I'm for the women. I'm for the men. I'm for everybody. I don't have that one. Luckily, because I've got so many other issues. I'm so happy I don't have that one. And now with that said, you know, this is a woman having a mother wound. Like, the mother is never on her side. The mother never looks out for her. The mother never cared for her. The mother doesn't do anything for her. The mother tells her to fend for herself. The mother is putting her in prostitution. The mother is telling her about the children. The mother is telling, like, all of this, so much hate from mother. You know, so much hate from mother. And in this hate from mother, the cycle continues, but it doesn't leap only into your children. It leaps into women relationships. And that is why, right? You can find in a workplace, there's this friend that knows everybody's boyfriends. Right? In terms of, like, I know him. Because one, he has stood outside and she opened for him, so she knows him. And they've gone to gala dinners, work functions, and he was there. And she knows everybody's lovers. But you don't know her lover. And when you get to meet her lover, she's hovering over her lover. Because she's insecure. Because she assumes that every single woman wants her man. And she must protect her territory. And this man now becomes property. He can't have female friends. He can't go out to female parties, girl boy parties. He can't have females follows and what. She's constantly on him. But that comes from mother wounds, right? That comes from insecurities that were bred. That comes from your mother having a taunting attitude with you that gives a slight sign of jealousy. Whether when you are achieving something, your mother says, that's that big a deal. You know? She says, that's not a big deal. There's a difference between a parent that's not supportive and a parent that shuts you down. And now when it's a girl child and a girl mom, right? And they're having this kind of feud. Those are mother wounds. So this woman hates every single woman. And that is why men have the audacity, right? They have the audacity to turn around and tell us that women hate each other. Do we really hate each other? Or is it just many women have had serious feuds with the girl child in their house? To an extent that the girl child had gone out and had feuds with every single other girl child in the world. And now it's just clashing. So now you can't see the good from the bad. You can't see the rotten from the ripe. You can't see anything. Because it seems as if the one that has been attacked, right? The woman that has been attacked for doing absolutely nothing. Yeah, you just want my man. Eh? You want my man. You want my man. As if the man is the price, right? You are my man. That girl, what she becomes now is rude. She becomes rude because if 10 women do the same thing to you, you're going to start thinking that every single woman is like that. And you become on the defense now. Every single time a woman walks up to you and her dude is there, you're like, yeah, brah, you can relax. Ain't nobody want to steal your ugly man. You know? And this stings, right? It stings on a day where you are not the girl with mom wounds. It stings. You're like, but I didn't say anything of, like, what? I didn't say that. That's not who I am. You know, it's like character assassination. And for the day that you actually are the girl with the mom wounds, you start a fight because that's all you know, because your mother starts fights with you. And it's that daddy-daughter relationship, right? That you can't seem to understand because you have not had a healthy relationship with your father. So you don't understand what it's like for a father to have a daughter. And just like he doesn't understand what it is for a mother to have a son. And it, doesn't understand what it is for a mother to have a daughter and a father to have a son. They're just different dynamics. We can try and understand it from the outside, from the pavement, but that one is a bit tough to navigate through. And it's a bit tough to navigate through because it's just the way it is. It's just tough to navigate. And we can see on the internet, when we see men embracing their daughters and treating their little girls like queens and all of that. All of you guys scream pedophile. All of you guys scream pedophile because 90% of you guys didn't have fathers. So you don't know what a healthy relationship looks like between a father and a daughter, a father and a son, a father and children. You have to experience certain things in order for you to know that it's going to be okay. It's just like step parents. You know, when we talk about step parents, many of us jump, right? Many of us are so defensive. We're so defensive, especially if you're the ones that have the children and the step parent, right? Is now with you and your children. The world is so dirty and it's so bad that there's this constant need to protect your children. And you don't even know when is danger coming. You don't know. You don't know if the person is dangerous or not. And that's why you can read newspapers that say that, yeah, guy killed stepson, like the one in Otavi. Guy's heartbreaking. Buries him under a pile of rocks because he wouldn't keep quiet. Killed him. Buried them because he wouldn't keep quiet. But he's two. So I don't know. But also, like, if you don't want a two-year-old in your vicinity, why are you rushing things with the mother to the extent where you are now in the children's presence? Why don't you just eat and go? Ah, but I like her. But you can't like her without her kids. So many of us are so afraid of step-parents, especially if you've had step-parent experiences that were bad. But also, you've had step-parent experiences that were good. So I've had both. Or I can say there are spaces within my life that I blame my stepmother for not getting her dude to do what his duties. To get his responsibilities in check, to get his house in check. I blame her for having a dude that is just running around willy-nilly and just making a mess of things, and she's not reprimanding this guy, you know, her husband. She's not reprimanding this guy. She's just allowing this guy to do whatever. And sometimes, right, I also blame her because maybe it's her idea. Maybe it's her idea that this man must not support his kids. That means this man must have one favorite, which is his child, which is her child. And she basically gets everything. But also, right? When I started to grow into being an adult, I also noticed that the children that are outside always assume that the child that is inside the house is eating nice. But it's because you're not inside the house. To know that people are also just drinking sugar water and the guy has not been home for months. But you wouldn't know that because you're thinking like, yeah, nah, he's just staying house Blake Bra with his new family. Caking it. Now, if you come from that setting, you don't know what it's like to have a father. You don't know. So when people talk about father, sit down. Sit here in the corner with me and Matriak. Sit down. So that the ones with fathers can talk. As we will talk later.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Alrighty, so sit down, friend. Sit down and allow those that have experienced it know what to say. Like, let's sit this down. Every single time we see fathers and daughters, you know, on the internet, you and your dirty mind, it's like a pedophile, 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 pedophile. It's because you don't know what it looks like. Now you want to ruin it for everybody that does. But sometimes it is pedophile. But we don't know. But ladies and gentlemen, let's have our first conversation for today. Today we're going to be talking to a also lovely Nadine. Nadine, she's going to be talking about how childhood trauma affects health across a lifetime. And we as Eagle Media House, we do not claim any ownership or any rights to the clips that we play or the soundtracks that we play, because we are strictly using it for illustration purposes and for information sharing purposes. Enjoy.
In the mid-90s, the CDC and Kaiser Permanente discovered an exposure that dramatically increased the risk for 7 out of 10 of the leading causes of death in the United States. In high doses, it affects brain development, the immune system, hormonal systems, and even the way our DNA is read and transcribed. Folks who are exposed in very high doses have triple the lifetime risk of heart disease and lung cancer, and a 20-year difference in life expectancy. And yet doctors today are not trained in routine screening or treatment. Now, the exposure I'm talking about is not a pesticide or a packaging chemical. It's childhood trauma. Okay, what kind of trauma am I talking about here? I'm not talking about failing a test or losing a basketball game. I am talking about threats that are so severe or pervasive that they literally get under our skin and change our physiology. Things like abuse or neglect, or growing up with a parent who struggles with mental illness or substance dependence. Now, for a long time, I viewed these things in the way I was trained to view them, either as a social problem, refer to social services, or as a mental health problem, refer to mental health services. And then something happened to make me rethink my entire approach. When I finished my residency, I wanted to go someplace where I felt really needed, someplace where I could make a difference. So I came to work for California Pacific Medical Center, one of the best private hospitals in Northern California. And together, we opened a clinic in Bayview Hunters Point, one of the poorest, most underserved neighborhoods in San Francisco. Now, prior to that point, there had been only one pediatrician in all of Bayview to serve more than 10,000 children. So we hung a shingle, and we were able to provide top quality care regardless of ability to pay. It was so cool. We targeted the typical health disparities: access to care, immunization rates, asthma hospitalization rates, and we hit all of our numbers. We felt very proud of ourselves. But then I started noticing a disturbing trend. A lot of kids were being referred to me for ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. But when I actually did a thorough history and physical, what I found was that for most of my patients, I couldn't make a diagnosis of ADHD. Most of the kids I was seeing had experienced such severe trauma that it felt like something else was going on. Somehow, I was missing something important. Now, before I did my residency, I did a master's degree in public health. And one of the things that they teach you in public health school is that if you're a doctor and you see 100 kids that all drink from the same well and 98 of them develop diarrhea, you can go ahead and write that prescription for dose after dose after dose of antibiotics, or you can walk over and say, what the hell is in this well? So I began reading everything that I could get my hands on about how exposure to adversity affects the developing brains and bodies of children. And then one day, my colleague walked into my office and he said, Dr. Burke, have you seen this? In his hand was a copy of a research study called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. That day changed my clinical practice and ultimately my career. The Adverse Childhood Experiences Study is something that everybody needs to know about. It was done by Dr. Vince Felitti at Kaiser and Dr. Bob Onda at the CDC. And together, they asked 17,500 adults about their history of exposure to what they called adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs. Those include physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, physical or emotional neglect, parental mental illness, substance dependence, incarceration, parental separation or divorce, or domestic violence. For every yes, you would get a point on your ACE score. And then what they did was they correlated these ACE scores against health outcomes. What they found was striking. Two things. Number one, ACEs are incredibly common. 67% of the population had at least one ACE, and 12.6%, one in eight, had four or more ACEs. The second thing that they found was that there was a dose-response relationship between ACEs and health outcomes. The higher your ACE score, the worse your health outcomes. For a person with an ACE score of four or more, their relative risk of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease was 2.5 times that of someone with an ACE score of zero. For hepatitis, it was also 2.5 times. For depression, it was 4.5 times. For suicidality, it was 12 times. A person with an ACE score of 7 or more had triple the lifetime risk of lung cancer and 3.5 times the risk of ischemic heart disease, the number one killer in the United States of America. Well, of course, this makes sense. You know, some people looked at this data and they said, come on, you know, you have a rough childhood. You're more likely to drink and smoke and do all these things that are going to ruin your health. This isn't science. This is just bad behavior. It turns out this is exactly where the science comes in. We now understand better than we ever have before how exposure to early adversity affects the developing brains and bodies of children. It affects areas like the nucleus accumbens, the pleasure and reward center of the brain that is implicated in substance dependence. It inhibits the prefrontal cortex, which is necessary for impulse control and executive function, a critical area for learning. And on MRI scans, we see measurable differences in the amygdala, the brain's fear response center. So there are real neurologic reasons why folks exposed to high doses of adversity are more likely to engage in high-risk behavior. And that's important to know. But it turns out that even if you don't engage in any high-risk behavior, you're still more likely to develop heart disease or cancer. The reason for this has to do with the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, the brain's and body's stress response system that governs our fight or flight response. How does it work? Well, imagine you're walking in the forest and you see a bear. Immediately, your hypothalamus sends a signal to your pituitary, which sends a signal to your adrenal gland that says, release stress hormones, adrenaline, cortisol. And so your heart starts to pound. Your pupils dilate, your airways open up, and you are ready to either fight that bear or run from the bear. And that is wonderful. If you're in a forest and there's a bear. But the problem is what happens when the bear comes home every night. And this system is activated over and over and over again. And it goes from being adaptive or life-saving to maladaptive or health-damaging. Children are especially sensitive to this repeated stress activation because their brains and bodies are just developing. High doses of adversity not only affect brain structure and function, they affect the developing immune system, developing hormonal systems, and even the way our DNA is read and transcribed. So for me, this information threw my old training out the window, because when we understand the mechanism of a disease, when we know not only which pathways are disrupted, but how, then as doctors, it is our job to use this science for prevention and treatment. That's what we do. So in San Francisco, we created the Center for Youth Wellness to prevent, screen, and heal the impacts of ACEs and toxic stress. We started simply with routine screening of every one of our kids at their regular physical, because I know that if my patient has an ACE score of 4, she's 2.5 times as likely to develop hepatitis or COPD. She's 4.5 times as likely to become depressed, and she's 12 times as likely to attempt to take her own life as my patient with 0 ACEs. I know that when she's in my exam room. For our patients who do screen positive, we have a multidisciplinary treatment team that works to reduce the dose of adversity and treat symptoms using best practices, including home visits, care coordination, mental health care, nutrition, holistic interventions, and yes, medication when necessary. But we also educate parents about the impact of ACEs and toxic stress the same way you would for covering electrical outlets or lead poisoning. And we tailor the care of our asthmatics and our diabetics in a way that recognizes that they may need more aggressive treatment given the changes to their hormonal and immune systems. So the other thing that happens when you understand this science is that you want to shout it from the rooftops. Because this isn't just an issue for kids in Bayview. I figured the minute that everybody else heard about this, it would be routine screening, your multidisciplinary treatment teams, and it would be a race to the most effective clinical treatment protocols. Yeah, that did not happen. And that was a huge learning for me. What I had thought of as simply best clinical practice, I now understand to be a movement. In the words of Dr. Robert Block, the former president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, adverse childhood experiences are the single greatest unaddressed public health threat facing our nation today. And for a lot of people, that's a terrifying prospect. The scope and scale of the problem seems so large that it feels overwhelming to think about how we might approach it. But for me, that's actually where the hope lies. Because when we have the right framework, when we recognize this to be a public health crisis, then we can begin to use the right toolkit to come up with solutions. From tobacco to lead poisoning to HIV/AIDS, the United States actually has quite a strong track record with addressing public health problems. But replicating those successes with ACEs and toxic stress is going to take determination and commitment. And when I look at what our nation...
Onda karahandu yako parateza morwe data. Paife, ohandimo kuyadi. Nondaka, Nedata, no show your old Maracama Hopi. Onitwe Kaime, Okufutarume, Okuingarume, Okujapandali, Fio Papa Ndauka, Onda Pumba Onitwe Kayo, Hai Dira Dira, Ya Fang, Omafikwame, Ohandi Streaming, Omafikwame, Ohandi Poppy, Omafikwame, Ohandi Ningaishe, Poshikanto Shime. Pamwina parateza, uinda holora, ameha ishipangere, osho, paumwini. Dira dira, umakota fanoni, data, momkaro wiri, mwana parika, okutuma kutumaraka, oku streaminga, nokudenga pamwina parates. Konga, parates, Namibia. Always,
always, okay. Nation's response has been so far. I wonder. Why haven't we taken this more seriously? You know, at first, I thought that we marginalized the issue because it doesn't apply to us, right? That's an issue for those kids in those neighborhoods, which is weird because the data doesn't bear that out. The original ACEs study was done in a population that was 70% Caucasian, 70% college educated. But then, the more I talk to folks, I'm beginning to think that maybe I had it completely backwards. If I were to ask how many people in this room grew up with a family member who suffered from mental illness, I bet a few hands would go up. And then if I were to ask how many folks had a parent who maybe drank too much or who really believed that if you spare the rod, you spoil the child, I bet a few more hands would go up. Even in this room, this is an issue that touches many of us. And I'm beginning to believe that we marginalize the issue because it does apply to us. Maybe it's easier to see in other zip codes because we don't want to look at it. We'd rather be sick. Fortunately, scientific advances and, frankly, economic realities make that option less viable every day. The science is clear. Early adversity dramatically affects health across the lifetime. Today, we are beginning to understand how to interrupt the progression from early adversity to disease and early death. And 30 years from now, the child who has a high ACE score and whose behavioral symptoms go unrecognized, whose asthma management is not connected, and who goes on to develop high blood pressure and early heart disease or cancer, will be just as anomalous as a 6-month mortality from HIV/AIDS. People will look at that situation and say, what the heck happened there? This is treatable. This is beatable. The single most important thing that we need today is the courage to look this problem in the face and say, this is real and this is all of us. I believe that we are the movement. Thank you.
In its simplest form, the mother... So let's talk about mother wounds and father wounds and narcissistic relationship. So the funny thing about this sort of constant presence of online mental health content is that I'm starting to see that we're using different terms to talk about similar things over time. I know, for example, there has been some reluctance for some people to use the term narcissistic, and I get it, because I have to say that some people spend more time trying to figure out if their parent is narcissistic than they do identifying that what is happening in the relationship is not okay and focusing on the effect it's having on them. Now, I had not heard this whole mother wound, father wound language until recently. And now, oddly, I guess it's sort of a Bader-Meinhof effect thing. I'm hearing it everywhere. I was even reading a tabloid article, as I do, this morning, and it came up again. So I'm like, okay, I gotta dig deeper into this. It seems to be sort of a repackaged description of what happens in narcissistic, toxic, and antagonistic parenting relationships. It's not any sort of official term in psychology, but my compilation after reading about a dozen articles from a variety of descriptions is that the mother wound, the father wound, they're actually different. Some of this seems to be sociological, since fathers and mothers take different roles in children's lives, at least till now, and these parental roles by gender are going to have different effects on their children based on the child's gender. And everything I have found on this is all based on the gender binary, so please keep that in mind. So that's all there is, mother, father, and children who are boys, children who are girls, right? I'm also seeing that a lot of the mother-father wound literature is also attempting to connect to the attachment literature. So that's my read on this, right? So listen to these descriptions and you're going to see where I'm going with this. So let's start with some cobbled together descriptions of the so-called mother wound. Almost all of the stuff I found on the mother wound took on the issue of mothers and daughters, which does miss, of course, that boys can be harmed by their mother's behavior as well. But I got to work with what I've got here, and that's what they wrote about. I do understand, however, that in many, if not most cases, that daughters are going to be affected in a different way by a mother because of societal expectations around the mother-daughter relationship and social learning, basically, with the girl identifying with the mother in a specific way. Doesn't matter how many mothers the child has. Daughter might have two mothers. Doesn't matter. It's going to have that effect. In its simplest form, the mother wound is an insecure attachment with a mother. And that these mother wounds tend to be intergenerational, happening one generation to the next. That the lack of a secure attachment with a mother leads to repeating that cycle by the mother with her own children and so on and so forth. A mother who is wounding, a wounding mother, I guess, is not attuned to her child, may also be competitive with her child, may have poor boundaries, and expect her daughter to be her friend and her shrink. And sometimes sons of these kinds of wounding mothers may actually find that their mother may also share inappropriately with them as well. They almost feel like they're a de facto husband to them. These are often emotionally immature and emotionally unavailable mothers, resulting in a sort of grail quest for love, often in the wrong places by their children, especially their daughters, right? Who will often will get into unhealthy relationships. And the boys who grow up with these mothers, and this is a guess on my part, may end up being subjugated in their relationships with women and may feel that in order to love someone, you have to put up with a lot of bad behavior. So you're already getting a whiff of what this is. A mother who is emotionally not attuned or not connecting to a child, relying on their child to meet their needs, but not vice versa, not meeting the child's needs. It's about entitlement and marginal empathy and selfishness. All of these things cause the mother wound that manifests in all that stuff I just shared, getting into unhealthy relationships and whatnot. But what about dear old dad and the father wound? Same thing. Emotionally immature and emotionally unavailable fathers who are often manipulative, not having a sense of secure attachment with that father, the lack of attunement, all the stuff we'd see in the mother wound too. The fallout of the mother wound can include things like self-esteem issues, difficulty in maintaining healthy relationships with women, feeling not good enough, getting into unhealthy intimate relationships, being emotionally detached from people. Similar fallout, similar issues raised with future relationships. There are some assumptions that are made about fatherhood when discussing the father wound, right? Mainly that the father may not ever notice or see their child. And perhaps they'll only notice their child if they achieve something. And maybe not even then. And maybe then they'll feel competitive with their child. But it can result in a similar kind of perfectionism that we also see as a result of mother wounds, but also an achievement orientation of always doing and forever trying to prove oneself to the father. So let's make this simpler. Because anyone who has a narcissistic parent has either a mother or father wound and may have both. And as I have shared in other videos, there is a secondary harm that may come from a parent who may not be narcissistic, may even be a parent you felt connected to, but who didn't or perhaps couldn't have your back and protect you from the toxicity, manipulation, control, and abuse of the narcissistic parent. That lack of a protective parent is also a potential cause of a mother or a father wound. So, what do you do? That's where I felt that the guidance was tricky. You do the usual stuff. You set the boundaries. Good luck with that. That's what they told people to do. Like, how would you do that? But sure, set boundaries. Get therapy. Yup, but make sure your therapist understands narcissism. Understand how what happened to you with a mother or father or both may be showing up in how you behave. In essence, understanding your why. I would throw in there that if you want to heal from a parent wound, forget all this mother-father stuff. You can call it a parent wound. Then figure out how you or what you do to feel safe. Again, what you do. Some of this may be trauma responses like fawning or freezing. Some of this may be doing, like being better or fixing or achieving or even having low expectations for yourself and for the world. Sadly, some of the guidance on mother and father wounds talks about forgiveness because your parent in this model is believed to have their own parent wound. Now that gets tricky because you already probably have thought about that a lot, but it might very well have spent more time finding empathy within yourself for your wounding parent than you have for yourself. The one thing I learned from all this mother-father wound stuff is that while all children of a narcissistic parent have a parent wound, not all parent wounds are caused by narcissistic parents. Some may be secondary to a parent living with addiction or a parent perhaps with other behavioral issues and who lacks support. Some of it may relate to not having sufficient support. And this gets tricky because you can appreciate what your parent went through. Ultimately, I would argue that the key to healing here would be to be able to create a coherent narrative in which you recognize that you are not to blame and their behavior is about them, not you. That your behaviors and schemas connect to your parents' behavior and that you are not doomed to repeat the cycle. Most people with a coherent narrative don't repeat the cycle. It can mean you having to learn to soothe and reassure yourself, take chances, and build up chosen family and other supports. Anyone who has been through a narcissistic relationship, in essence, has people wounds. And this is why for many survivors, relationships become scary and can also feel exhausting because there are spaces where we have to be vigilant and get everything right and be perfect and hyper caregive. People wounds, parent wounds, mother wounds, hell, even sibling wounds, friend wounds. The healing starts when we start connecting the dots. Understand ourselves and ending the cycle with your story. And none of this is easy, but it is possible and it can end with you. I hope that helps you understand whatever form of wound from whatever relationship you've been through. Obviously the parent wounds run deeper, but I hope it helps. Thanks again.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm. It's not something...
Save and win at WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Get 4 kg Cadilla mixed chicken for $189.99. 1 kg pasta grande spaghetti for $19.99. 750 gram Nola mayo for just $37.99. And 2 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for only $52.99. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
Before, we've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Hi everyone, it's Dr. Romani, and welcome back to this YouTube channel on all kinds of things related to narcissism and narcissistic relationships. I know that many of you have wanted a little bit more content on parenting, and this video actually not only addresses what many people who are co-parenting with a narcissist wants to know, but for any of you who had a narcissistic parent, this might also give you some information that will help you sort of think through these narcissistic relationships you're in, whether you grew up in one or you're trying to raise a child now in one. What I'm going to be doing together in this video is bringing together about all the information on all those different narcissistic subtypes, grandiose, covert, malignant, and talk about how those directly impact parenting, both if you're co-parenting and if you grew up like this. So let's take this on, okay? Now, I know, and we already have a series on this if you want to go back. It's quite a long series, like a 10 to 12 episode series. I've talked about the different subtypes of narcissism on this channel: grandiose, covert, malignant, etc., etc. And these different types, these different narcissistic types, they present in different ways in different circumstances. And one of those circumstances, and it's probably where it's almost most profoundly felt, is parenting. Because this pattern of narcissism can be a little bit varied, for example, a malignant narcissist is a very, very different parenting experience for the child or a co-parent than would be a communal narcissist. It can often mean that survivors of different patterns of narcissistic abuse may also be having different experiences, and why maybe your story is not the same as someone else who had a narcissistic parent. So much of the content and the material on narcissism out there often really focuses on the baseline grandiose narcissist, and that's fine, but it misses the boat on other people's experiences, and it can be quite frustrating if you are trying to co-parent with a covert narcissist, or your parent is a covert narcissist, and what you are reading doesn't fully capture your experience. You're already confused enough. You don't want the content to be confusing as well. As you already know, the core of narcissism remains the same for all of the narcissistic types, right? The core of narcissism, the lack of empathy, the entitlement, the grandiosity, the inability to manage frustration or disappointment, the validation seeking, the arrogance, and the egocentricity, as well as the core insecurity of these folks. But the ways that these things, that these patterns are expressed and experienced, can vary based on the narcissistic type. Now, we know that parenting is a core relationship. It's probably one of the most core relationships, right? It shapes the psychological development of a human being. And if you are co-parenting with a narcissist, knowing the specific challenges you may encounter based on sort of the narcissistic type of your partner can help you understand what you are up against, or understand perhaps as an adult what your experience was as a child with a parent and maybe continues to be with that parent as an adult. So let's start at the top. Yes, where everyone else starts. So we might as well start there. The grandiose narcissist. You know what they are. Grandiose and larger than life and attention seeking and arrogant and selfish. Let's face it. The grandiose narcissists are the ones who care a lot more about how things look than how they actually are. Parenting for a grandiose narcissist. When a grandiose narcissist becomes a parent, it's about putting on a show, right? Like, look at us, and I've got these great kids, and on and on and on. In public, they may actually really try to look like devoted parents and talk about their kids and the pictures and the whole nine yards. But in private, they're actually really not interested in the day-to-day slog of being a parent. They may be the proverbial Disneyland parent. They're there for the big days, and they may also, though, push children to an excessive degree to be good at something that makes the parent look good. Be good at sports, be good at school, be good at performing, whatever matters to the parent. And may actually disconnect from the child when the child is not succeeding as they want them to, or is being the person they want them to, right? The child is like an extension of the narcissistic parent. The grandiose narcissistic parent needs to be liked, and so they will do what they need to do to be liked. But they also don't tolerate frustration well. So they may get quite angry and have a short fuse with, you know, what is the inherent ups and downs of parenting. They may also foist a lot of the unpleasant parenting duties on the other parent so they can stay as the well-liked parent. Now, if you had a grandiose narcissistic parent, you knew then and now it was all about them all the time. And to this day, as an adult, having been raised with that kind of parent, you may still be vulnerable to pushing your own needs away and attending to the more demanding people who are in your midst. If you are co-parenting with a grandiose narcissistic parent, it can be jarring and maddening to watch them make parenting all about them. And they'll talk a tough game about what a terrific parent they are and how much they love their kids, but actually really not be up to the drudgerous demands of what parenting really is. And with a grandiose narcissist in the post-divorce period, they may be into the kids when it works for them. But for example, when they want to start dating and want to start living their new best life, be prepared that they may view your children as a little bit of an inconvenience in their new life and will variably embrace them and put them on display based on the function the children are serving for them. And you'll still find yourself having the less pleasant jobs of having to be the homework police and all of that. Now, with the malignant narcissist, this is a whole different game. Malignant narcissists are much more menacing. They can also be quite exploitative, more manipulative, more prone to lying, and may even be almost paranoid or even sadistic in the kinds of actions they engage in. A divorce from a malignant narcissist can often be really unsettling. Malignant narcissists can also be quite cold as parents, almost kind of scary parents, and children may actually be quite a bit more anxious with them. In this form of narcissism, we will see that these are parents that are often more concerned with power, control, and dominance, and will bring these expectations and these styles into parenting. In fact, the malignant narcissistic parent may not be that interested in being a parent, but may be more apt to attempt to use the courts and processes of custody and all this stuff to punish you by manipulating custody and financial arrangements and just keep playing games with that, you know, but constantly adjusting and drawing you back in to sort of courtroom situations. If you were raised by a malignant narcissist, you may still experience symptoms that feel more in line with post-traumatic stress as an adult, and you may still feel quite activated, triggered, and on edge, and may still find it difficult to feel safe in adult relationships or have chosen adult relationships that aren't safe. If you are trying to co-parent with a malignant narcissist, I can tell you right now, you are exhausted. You are exhausted by what was very likely a terrifying divorce process. You're exhausted and fearful of leaving the children with their co-parent, since malignant narcissists can often be quite impulsive and careless. So they may not lock things properly or make things that are fully safe for the children. You may be fearful of the menace and the threats that they still hold over you. And you may remain concerned that because you may still have contact with the malignant narcissist through the children, how much more psychological harm they can continue to enact. The covert narcissist, which is a style and a subtype many of you are familiar with, are characterized by a more vulnerable and victimized style. They do often present as victims, feeling like life never goes their way, nothing they wanted ever happens, people are out to get them, that they deserve so much more from life. As parents, they will often remain sullen victims, and they may share this victimhood, inappropriately so, with children who may struggle with confusion and guilt about how they can step in and help or rescue their parent who sort of feels like such a victim, right? The child doesn't understand that they just want to help the parent. They want to help their covert narcissistic parent feel better. If you were raised by a covert narcissistic parent, you may still vacillate between guilt and anger, which makes sense because the covert narcissist is so prone to the sort of victimized identity. You may have felt as a kid, you often had to rescue them, but also feel anger because of how much parenting was always about them, not the children, about the parent. And they would talk about, oh, parenting takes such a toll on me and nobody in this household ever appreciates me enough. And everyone out there has it so much easier than me as a parent. If you are co-parenting with a covert narcissist, it feels like having another child, having a very sullen, angry adolescent child. They will at times be victimized and sullen. And you'll feel like you have to babysit them to prepare them for watching their children. You have to get them completely ready. And they may not be able to manage the demands of children because they feel so victimized and put upon. And then the covert narcissist may alternate between getting really rageful and angry at the children and then feeling sorry for themselves, saying, I'm doing the best that I can and nobody is supporting me. That's a very common stance in the covert narcissistic parent. And then, in other words, the kids often feel the need to rescue that parent. What about the communal narcissists? Well, communal narcissists are the folks, as you now know, they're the ones who derive their validation from doing charitable deeds or good deeds. These are people who often want to be viewed as humanitarians or as saviors and will often want to be on center stage or get validation via social media for all the good things they do for other people. Look at me, I'm a rescuer. And they're often looking real good while they rescue. However, all that charitable do-gooderness seems to fade behind closed doors when they're with their family. And while they may be enraptured with helping children on the other side of the globe or children that are not related to them through their charitable endeavors, they may actually be quite disengaged from their own children. They may want to put their parentness on display for a photo op, which makes them look like, look at me, I rescue people and I am a parent, but they really don't want to do the work of parenting. And well, they will, though, want to get the validation of being this really publicly involved parent. Your child may wonder why their parent is bringing their A game to other people and to other children, and the entire family system may actually start to burn out on hearing how lucky you are to have such a community-oriented person as part of their family. If you were raised by a communal narcissist, you are well acquainted with the alternate universe in which you were raised, a world in which
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. Is jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet? Kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Everyone told you how wonderful your parent is and how much they support the community and how much good they've done. And yet, behind closed doors, you had to endure your parents' lack of empathy and disconnection. There can be a lingering sense, if you're raised by a communal narcissistic parent, of feeling like you're not enough, or maybe even just plain confused, since your parent was able to bring their best to other people. If you are co-parenting with a communal narcissist, it will sometimes mean working around their so-called schedule of being a great person. And they may want the children on demand to help them look good at events and on camera and in pictures and in front of other people. But maybe the communal narcissistic co-parent may be less engaged at times when the children aren't actually as useful to their portrayal of themselves as a savior, and in fact, may be always asking for workarounds regarding custody and all of that, so they can focus on their important work for other people, with the entitled expectation of the communal narcissist being that everyone should support their important world-changing work, including you, their ex-partner, and make your schedule, make your schedule work around theirs. Now, the neglectful narcissists are those who literally almost don't engage with people in their world unless they need something from them, and in that way can feel very manipulative. Neglectful narcissists view people as conveniences, as a bridge to get something done. And a neglectful narcissist will sort of access other people when it works for them. A person who's a neglectful narcissist will often view children as a major inconvenience. And as such, the neglectful narcissistic parent may be very disengaged, very disinterested, and very remote. This can be very challenging for a child who is often trying to garner the parent's attention. And this can, over time, impact a child's sense of worth, as the child may feel as though they are not worthy of their parent's attention because the parent is so inattentive. If you were raised by a neglectful, narcissistic parent, it was, honestly, it's probably destabilizing, because these are often very cold, distant, detached, remote parents with little interest in parenting or in other people, unless those other people are completely aligned with what they need and want. If your interests, for some reason, might have coincided with your neglectful, narcissistic parents' interests, then they might actually have been interested in you for a minute. But then we'll go ahead and start doing them on their own. So the best way I could portray it is that you were the child with a baseball glove waiting forever for the parent to show up and throw the ball, just like you thought parents were supposed to do, and they never did. This can be a difficult setup going into adulthood, a sense of not enoughness, a feeling that you have to jump through hoops to get the attention of other people, of having to win this kind of parent over. In fact, you might find that as a child, you actually took on hobbies or interests that the neglectful narcissistic parent had just to get them to spend a little time with you. If you are co-parenting with a neglectful narcissist, the harder work that you face as a co-parent may be in helping your children through the crisis of wondering why their parent has relatively limited interest in them. In fact, a neglectful narcissistic parent may just cut bait and leave you with the kids full time. And you have to carefully help your child not to internalize the sense that they're not enough. Not to mention your healing, your own healing from a marriage spent with someone you barely, with someone who barely knew that you existed. It's as though you were just like an unwatered plant in that marriage. The self-righteous narcissists are the ones who derive their narcissistic validation and supply by sort of holding themselves up as a morally superior person and will be more focused on doing things just so rather than from a more flexible place of the heart, which is what you need with kids. Everything can't just go off on militaristic precision. Self-righteous narcissists can actually be a bit confusing because they often look quite loyal. They may be, for example, the pillars of a religious community, following the religious edicts to the letter of the law. They may be really into following rules. They may have a very black and white sense of right and wrong. This type of narcissistic pattern, we can also see these are folks who are very judgmental, and they can be critical of other people. They criticize everything. They could criticize other people's work ethic. They criticize their lifestyles. They criticize their jobs. They criticize their houses. They criticize their behaviors. There's a tremendous rigidity to them. And all of us feel like a 10-year-old child in the face of their scoldy, judgmental, and rigid ways of being. For a child, this is a very strict and limiting childhood in many cases. Self-righteous parents are often quite rigid, punitive, judgmental, and the child is raised with a strong sense of conditionality, a sense of that you have to follow the rules to be loved. Self-righteous narcissistic parents are often quite authoritarian as well. Children raised like this often believe that this kind of parent values the rules of order more than they actually value the child. And into adulthood, that kind of rigid, cold, and choosing morality over love and being there for your child can result in some self-devaluation. If you had this kind of parent, you had what might have felt like more of a militaristic or ridiculously strict and judgmental childhood. Self-righteous narcissists, even when they have plenty of money, can be very, very cheap, you know, miserly. And while there is some virtue, I strongly believe in the virtue of developing a work ethic and a child having a small job to make some money of their own, the cheapness of the self-righteous narcissist often meant an inefficiency that was unnecessary. And when they could have helped family members and their own children with their goals or lighten some of the stress in that, and they could have done it easily, they would often wield money in a very punitive way. Having a parent like this can often result in lots of self-judgment going into childhood. In the worst case, if you have this kind of parent, you might actually have been sort of infected by their rigid moral mantles and sort of keep staying to that rigidity. In some cases, we see extreme rebellion if you're raised by this kind of parent to the point of harm, putting yourselves in risky situations and acting out. But in general, having a parent like this can fuel a person with a chronic feeling of the sense of shame and judgment trailing you wherever you go. If you are co-parenting with a self-righteous narcissist, be prepared for financial debates about the smallest things for the entire period of having minor children. They're often quite ritualized and obsessive around all kinds of details. And even if they don't really enjoy the kids, they will fight over the extra 3 hours of custody they are entitled to because one time traffic meant you got home a few hours late from a 3-day vacation, despite you not holding them to the same standard. So it can be maddening. Or self-righteous narcissists, if you have to do this with self-righteous narcissists, they will often be quite openly judgmental about some of the rhythms of your household. your children may have to adjust to going back and forth between one home that's rather rigidly regimented to a fault, and then perhaps if your home is healthier, to the more responsive rhythms of a healthier home. We also know that narcissism often also develops out of a cultural or generational dynamic. Perhaps parents who, for whatever, where they came from or what was happening when they were children, who endured trauma or were from cultures characterized by authoritarianism, very, very sharply demarcated economic stratification from cultures that are very patriarchal and top-down and familial structures. These patterns may also sometimes be observed in members of a family who they themselves had or have or had parents who had also endured the tremendous stress of a difficult migration experience or a difficult refugee status or war or other unrest where they were living. These are sometimes families from a cultural perspective. We can also see that families in which loyalty is everything, and it's almost a blind loyalty, difficult family members can often get enabled because of these cultural and family historical issues. She's been through so much, that's why she's difficult, don't say anything. That sort of kind of a sequence. If you were raised by a parent with these kinds of histories behind them, these really difficult histories, you may have felt very hopeless and caught between two worlds, the culture in which you live and the culture of your family. You may have felt stifled or silenced by these patterns, but you may have also, and may still also, feel very guilty at pushing back, knowing your family or your parents' history, leaving you in a permanent sense of dissonance, knowing that they had gone through so much, you might have had an easier path that explains some of their patterns, but you're still struggling, and even as an adult, struggling on how to fit your family into your life. If you are co-parenting with someone who has had this sort of generational or cultural issues contributing to their narcissistic style, you may have tried throughout the relationship, throughout the marriage, to attempt to understand their culture and the origins of these patterns, and may have even justified your partner's behavior to yourself and your children because of knowing what the family, their family or in-laws' family had been through. And you, and they, your former partner's family may have had very different conceptions of child rearing than you do. And you may also have different conceptions of child rearing than your in-laws. Your children may be actually quite confused by all of this and also feel guilty if they know about their family and their cultural history of that other parent. So it can also cause a tension in there. As you listen to this, you may think, my parent was actually more than one of these types. I had a parent with one type, and now I'm in a relationship or co-parenting with somebody who's narcissistic, and it's a different type. And that just means more challenges. And you may be facing the varied challenges of the varied types, which is actually quite taxing. Knowing these issues as I've laid them out in this video actually doesn't change anything in your circumstances per se. My hope is that understanding some of this can help you be better prepared for co-parenting challenges, not wasting time on communication strategies that won't and don't work, to maintain realistic expectations, and to recognize the psychological hurdles that you may face, continue to face as an adult as a result of being raised within these patterns. I hope this gives some clarity on how these subtypes work and how they may be differentially impacting you as a co-parent or as an adult who has a narcissistic parent. Thanks again. And also,
wonderful. Today is a wonderful day where we are doing the most, and we're talking about the mother wound, the father wound that the internet is talking about. Good evening to you.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, darling. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. But you have to hold the line for me.
Oh, okay.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Good evening, Aina. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you, Mom? I'm with Leo.
You're with who?
Leo.
Hello, Leo. Leo, 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 Leo. Leo, 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 Leo. One of my childhood little brothers, his name is Leo.
Hello, my dear.
Hey, just listen. One of my childhood little brothers, his name is Leo. So now his younger cousin, D. Helen, would stand at the door and she would just say, Leo. And then Leo is like, yeah? Leo, 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 Leo. And he hated it. Like, stop, man. Leo, 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 Leo. Oh, for a good solid 10 minutes, man. Just Leo, 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 Leo. Oh.
Was he a child?
No, she was a child. Him? Him, he was bigger. But
I can see why he would be annoyed.
Yeah, because Leo, 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 Leo. Ah, no. And she's not saying anything about anything, man. She's just calling him just Leo. Eh. Leo, 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 Leo. The first Leo is nice and quiet and he has to retire. After that, it's just a mess. To be honest.
Yeah.
So how are you guys doing?
We're good.
How are your parents? I want to know. Hey, you guys are on these internet streets complaining about, yeah, so we are having a wah-wah-wah-wah. So.
Oh, how are you, ma'am? How have you been?
I have been well, thank you.
Oh, thank God for that.
Me also, because, hey, $65,000 for a dress. It's not one dress. It's many dresses. Really
$65K, that's a car.
Ah, I know which guy is it, nay. Hey, you guys all keep saying.
Yeah, it's 65. Just for me to open my internet today, nay. Because I've been offline better. I don't know. The last time I made this call, I forgot that I have a phone. Like, you know, honestly, ma'am, let me tell you how my week was. No, it's so funny. Listen, my week, maybe Tuesday, after I finished writing, I went straight home. And then Thursday, I took down my phone. And then I joked. All along, I thought I don't have awareness. I don't have seconds. I'm not texting. I'm not calling. Bali, I have, check. Wednesday, when my way to school, when I'm in class, I just check the time. It was 8. I put my phone in my bag. Flight mode, but do not disturb mode. No push. And then around 5, I went back home. I forgot that I have a phone. Like, of I forgot. I did not touch the phone. I forgot that I have a phone. And I thank God, because even if my phone was lost, and okay, now I'm on the teacher. I got in a pen. I did phone.
Which is a good and thing. Then, but how do you feel?
First day, I was writing mental, All along when I was at school, I was like, okay, to how will I connect all those mental things? So I got three terminals. I had already. How? Now I'm there. My paper, when I showed the man, I was going mental, it's when I remember that I have a phone. I have his phone, but it's my phone. Just for me to, then I got message, I have MTC, Takuti, I access party, that day. All along I have away.
The whole time.
And yeah, we are bragging that I'm not texting, I'm not calling.
And the only reason you're not doing it is because you think you don't have airtime.
I thought I don't have anything. I thought I have nothing. Yeah. And I don't know. It has never happened to me. The Zimbongo Ziange, which I have a phone. I even forgot that I'm in a relationship. And the
Kuchangwa is... Are you really though? But are you really, like, I get that, you know? I get that you think you are, like, yeah, the cards add up. But...
Just that I used to see this guy on campus and then we greet each other on campus.
You and your boyfriend greet each other on campus?
No.
Hi, sir, how are you? I'm fine. How's the delegation?
I'm not texting him, be like, no, I'll be calling. He got called, I found his missed call, Kupendo Kira Thursday. I'm like, duh.
Of course. Oh, God.
I forgot that I have a phone.
Uh-huh. So, let's just talk about your lies. I thought your boyfriend lives in Walvis Bay. Like, what is this? Oh, and seeing Canada on campus. We have another one. So fast.
He has been the one, man. It's just that we are doing the same course. He didn't change. It's just that we are doing the same course.
So now he's there. His internship was in Walvis Bay. Your stories are not adding up. Mm-mm. Your stories are not making sense.
No, he has been the one. I told you that.
He has been the one where? In the coast or what?
No.
Watch your body come by.
No, kwazapo nale?
Oh, aina! Azipo unake! Nuvo?
I go no, wona renko.
Wona lunake. You see that, Leo?
My girl is going through a lot.
Oh, that is not going through a lot. That is in a year. How many men do you have, huh? Huh? Let's just be honest here. Huh? Want to normalize jumping? How many? It's the third one this year. How? That's what I keep telling you people. And this is what I keep saying. You people that think that your body count will never go up. Ne? Just count if you are having 3 boyfriends every year, for 5 years. Count the math. Let's waste my calculator. Take it out. What is this? We all know that you guys are having sex in every single relationship. So 3 times. 5. No. Yeah, 3 times 5. Yeah, 15. Let's say hypothetically now. 22. Yeah, 22.
Where did 22 come from?
That one is turning 22 next year after October. So let's say, it's 22. It's 22. She's 22 years old.
No, I'm 22
Thursday. Osho 30. Yeah. So 2025, 3 boyfriends. Yeah. 2024, 2 boyfriends. Plus, 3 plus 2. And then 2023, plus 2 boyfriends. Plus 2. I know them, Leo. Plus 2. Body count at 21-7. Oshiri, Oshiri. Body count at 21-7. Okay, so let's say now.
Wait, let me not cut you short.
Yeah.
Does it imply that every time you're in a new relationship, you guys are having intercourse?
Of course you are.
No.
Once you have intercourse, my dear, you never go back to normal, boring, whack relationships where you are not doing nothing. So you never sleep over at this person's place, eh? So you spend time on campus. What are you, a high school child? You guys must stop wanting to parcel us and lie to us here. How? Every single relationship after you have sex once. Every single relationship after that you're having sex. There's no sexless relationship you ever have again in your life. The only people that can ever have sexless relationships are those that have not tasted the forbidden fruit. The ones that have not indulged. Or people that have not stayed together longer than 3 months. If it is in these 3 months, if you're saying, oh, we're together for 4 months, you're having sex.
Mom, if it's a long relationship.
Are you having sex with this one or not?
No, I'm not.
Why not? What's wrong with him?
Nothing is wrong.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing is wrong.
Then what's the problem? Is he ugly?
No, he's not. He's fine.
He's fine in what way? I like you because you are complicated. Any woman that says his personality is fine is because he's lacking somewhere. Every single woman on this planet that ever refers to their boyfriend as he has a great personality is a lie. There's something seriously wrong with him. I don't want to sleep with him because he's ugly. I don't want to sleep with him because his breath smells. I don't want to sleep with him because he's not my type. He's just a very nice guy.
That makes so much sense.
Yes, it does. It does. Because we never ever, do you know, we never ever, what is that guy's name? Aquaman. What is his name, Aquaman? Leo.
Ben.
Leo, what is that guy, Aquaman's name?
Jason Momoa.
We never ever say, Jason Momoa has a great personality. We all want to smash. Now you're trying to tell me here that, he's got a great personality. He's whack. Yeah, that's why we see him on campus. That's why we don't care if he's calling or not. That's why you can forget our phones, because it's not eventful there in that relationship. There's nothing happening there. If I decided I don't like that guy and I want you as my child to leave him, you'll leave him. Why? Because he's not eventful. We're not attached. You guys want to make, you want to parcela me. How can you parcela the kingpin of the rule book? How?
Listen, you're my mom, and then I'm telling you this, yo.
I'm telling you now, like, so you can, like, the problem is that maybe you introduced him to the show and now you're just saying. If he's listening, you're like, it's not true. It's not true. Then you go and text me after the show. Mom, just say you were joking. It was content for the show. I will not. Never. We must turn every stone here. What is this?
Right.
He has a great personality. When you see Jason Momoa, you never say he has a great personality. All of us, he makes you as a man, he makes you question, if you are straight or not, because you know, like, yeah, when you look there, you're like, even I would smash as a man. Eh? Now you're saying that as women, we must look at this man and then we'll be like, he's got a great personality. The only people that have great personalities are guys that don't deserve no kitty. I know that's right.
I'm out. I'm telling you, just tell me that you're joking.
I'm joking. But you must pace yourself. You must pace yourself, Aina. You can't be changing them left, right, and center like this. Your body count is going to go extremely high. And you are not going to see it until you get to 25 and you are at least 30 dudes. I'm telling you. So it's either stay away from relationships.
Yeah, let me just stay away.
Yeah.
Can you not Can we not talk about this on the group?
I told you people, if you want this space to stay safe for you, stop introducing people that might compromise you to it. You must check, like you young girls, right? You guys must check, you must check your body count. You must give yourself space. It's either you have space or you have tolerance with these dudes out here. If you don't have tolerance, then stay away.
Okay. No, talk to Leo for now,
Spend at least, you know, tolerate this person. You can't just break up with everybody that's not tickling your fancy. Then stay away from people's children.
The one thing about mom, when you're talking to her, you actually forget the charm.
Yeah. As long as we're not swearing, we're good. Let's go, bruh. What is this Maybach music things? I've never seen Aina blink so much. Ugh, mom, nah, she's the best, bruh. Like, just listen, you know, just download the app, babe. Like, oh my God. Hey, came to ruin her whole safe space. As we know, Aina is a savage here. Eh? What am I gonna do with a dude that doesn't have money? And now she's like, let's talk small. If we talk small, we're gonna dim our light. We're not dimming no lights here. As we're going raw, commando. Is that what you think of me, really? That's the question you're going to get via text. was she right? He's like, no, it's just for content. No matter what your content download. But we all know that this is not scripted because you didn't even know that you have a way. Oh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool, Leo. Leo is just writing.
Yeah.
Girls must not call me personality things. A girl that calls you personality things, Leo, ne? Yeah. That is, like, you literally just turn around and say, nah, that's not what I'm here for. Then you walk away. That in itself is going to make her, right, start chasing after you because people have a tendency of not wanting to be rejected. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how you get the girl.
So basically,
and that's how you turn the tables also, ne?
So basically, if she rejects, I just walk away.
If she rejects, huh? How is she going to reject?
If she has to reject.
Oh, if she has to reject, right? If she rejects you and then she's like, no, I just really want us to be friends and I don't see you like that and all of that. You can either play the bad card or the good card. This is bad advice that I'm giving on the day that I'm talking about narcissists, but who cares? Anyhow. So you can either play the good card or the bad card. The bad card is you can sigh a sigh of relief in front of her face. Right?
You can do what?
Sigh of relief. Like, oh, sure, I'm so grateful that you said that because I thought I had to mac on you because you were kind of giving me vibes of you want me and I didn't want to make you feel bad. But now that I know that you don't even see me in that light, I'm so grateful for that. It's all good. Thank you so much. No problem. I'll see you around. Then you walk away. That, yeah. Like what? What just happened? That's how you turn the tables. Turn the tables. Like, you, like, automatic, you reject her back with her reject. Flat. You just say like, yo, I actually only, the only reason, not because I even like you, but the only reason, ne, I met on you is because you were all over me. And I felt kind of bad and I thought like maybe I should just ask you out and then maybe take you on a date or something. But now that I know that you're not into me like that, ne, it's even better. Now I can really go get the girl I want.
Ah, no. That is so crazy. It might just work.
It's not might.
Yeah.
It will work. And then she'll send you Bible pages that you don't reply to. Oh, better yet, right? You reply after every 4 to 5 hours. With 3 words. It's all good. What? No, I just wrote my whole hand out and like, it's all good. What is all good? Like, no, don't worry about it, Ndapewa. We're good. Like, yeah. What? Good about what? But I was telling you, like, I was rejecting you and you are not receiving my rejection. You're like, no, it's all good. No. Don't worry about it. But you reply after very long intervals. Very long. Like 5 hours. But you just reply with, no biggie. Like whatever she says, right? You just say no biggie after 5 hours.
But will that really work?
My dear, then she'll call, right? And then when she calls, you sound like you are in a hella funny situation. Like, hello? Yo, what's up? It's like, no, I just wanted to ask you. You know what? Wait. Before you continue, I'll call you back in 2 minutes. You don't call back. She'll do that like 3 times and then you just never call back.
That's bad.
Exactly.
Exactly why it's a bad card.
Right? That's why I said it's a bad card. It's a bad card, but who cares? Okay, trying to anyway. Reject us while we're at our prime. No one will hate us.
And the good card?
Well, this one is boring. But okay, so the good card that you can play when she says that, you can either say like, no, it's all good. But then what you do is you cut her off. So either way, all my cards involve rejecting her back. You cut her off.
I'll go with a bad card.
Yeah, exactly. It's also more exciting. It's more exciting. Yeah? Every time you get to your phone, you know there are 10 texts. Girls don't handle rejection well. Girls hate it. Girls really, really hate it. Who open wounds. Girls don't like rejection. They think they're the only ones that can reject people. So I can reject you.
Reject left, right, and center.
Hey, every day you are being rejected, Leo. You never ask your mother for advice. Ha! These girls, you can play them quickly. Yeah, telling you are being rejected every day. You're like, it's okay. She don't want me. It's not okay, bruh.
I found my
coach. It's not okay. Because first of all, like, you like my company, you're talking to me all the time. So basically we are already dating, we're just not doing any mushy stuff. And then all of a sudden when I wanna date you, you're telling me that no. Then let's just cut everything then. Yeah. So, she's gonna tell you about like, so can we still be friends? You're like, yeah, cool. You can still be friends. You're just not gonna be a good friend. Gonna be a bad friend. Like, yeah, I'm just on the way to the hospital, you know, for my mom's cancer. Cool.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
of course she's expecting more because the whole time you have been her pillar of strength. I just feel like ever since, you know, you asked me out and I rejected you, things have changed. Yeah, because I was playing boyfriend without a title and now I'm just a friend. How many other friends do you have that are not accompanying you to the hospital? Relax, man. I only came because of my own interests here. I thought you're gonna be my girl. And boys and girls, they support each other through these things. It's called the relationship. People get into relationships because they want partners for life to go through things with. Now I might be going through things with a complete stranger. I might not even remember you in 10 years.
Mother.
Say hi to your mother. Say hi to your mom. Straight. What?
I've been asking the wrong people for advice.
Why are you asking rejectees?
What?
Hit hard. That's gonna hit hard.
Of course it's gonna hit hard, but the problem with you girls, right, is that you guys are stringing our sons along. You guys are doing everything. One, you are going with me to the shop to go and buy underwear. You know that I'm feeling you. And you are going to go and buy underwear with me. And you are telling me that I must just pretend that I don't think you're fire. Hawop, man. People just want to abuse others. No. You want to be holding my hand. You want to walk with me holding my hand. You call me all the time. You want everything that screams relationship without the title. Basically, I'm keeping the place warm until some dude with a Benz comes along and scoops you up. And then I must still do the runaround for your abortion pills. Nah, bruh. Nah. My mother done taught me better.
You know what, man? It's all right, girl.
It's all right. It's sharp. Nah, bruh. Nah. Ain't nobody doing that.
And I can't make that. Lankers is crucial.
Exactly. Yeah, you are running around helping people with their parents, helping people with their assignment things. What are you, Heleki? You people don't know how much power you guys have. You guys are my kids. You guys are not supposed to suffer. These are my children. Exactly.
I thought I knew you.
Me? Oh, you felt like mama is like soft and stuff. Mama is soft with you guys. That's what a parent is. I have never seen you blink so much. Relax, relax.
The scary part is that it all makes sense.
It makes sense. The problem is that you guys are bestie. But if you look at the concept of bestie, it's just boyfriend without benefits. And then she's giving the cookie to some guy that doesn't deserve her, that's making her cry every day. Now all your t-shirts are having tear stains. Yeah. At least get kitty, bruh. Ah. Bust a nut. Add to the body count, bruh. What is it? If she's giving it away, she might as well give you some too.
You know what, man? I try.
Never seen you blink so much. Are you sweating a little bit, Leo?
Bruh.
Relax.
I am confused, but then again, I'm so...
You're so assured. Makes sense. Why are you guys girls besties? Like, stop. Our bestie sent me $200. Do you know what? The boyfriend sends absolutely nothing because love don't cost a thing, kama. But who bestie? Small last money you are giving. You know, you buy her airtime hoping that she'll call you. She doesn't even call you, bruh. And even when she calls you, it's just for advice. So you must scratch your poor little mind that hasn't even experienced that much.
And then next time she calls you, she says, nah, my second's almost done.
Yeah, my second's almost done. Oh, you know that one very well. Eh? Yeah.
Woohoo.
Eh? Nine hours of away. And then she calls you for the last 3 minutes of it. Okay, then I was just calling saying, say goodnight. Ha! My seconds are up. Come and say goodnight. She doesn't even send you memes. She ain't even that funny. Relax. Relax, bro.
You?
Oh.
Anna. I mean, I know.
Hey! Tama na kuya pokithanin. My goodness. Open the window, Leo. It's a little hot in here. Yeah. Well, that's screwfire, left, right, and center. But you guys have a phenomenal mother. Ah. Your mother can be bad and good at the same time. Maybe you guys are being raised by a narcissistic parent. We don't know. That's why we're trying to figure it out.
It kind of makes sense. No, there's no reason to get screwed. No. You can always play it around. You can always turn the tables around. Turn the tables around, guys. Stop eating crumbs. In a year, you get laid once. Why? People are dishing the things out, and you get once. And you don't even complete. You have to go and finish yourself. I don't want any more. I just feel like this is a mistake. How? Let the girls give you willingly. Nicely. You don't have to be a bad guy. You don't have to be a bad guy. You just have to turn the tables. After you turn the table once, right? Then you have a conversation. Which, okay, so we're going to do this, right? We're going to be in a committed monogamous relationship. That's what we're going to do. I'm not going to play you and I'm not going to do anything like that. You don't ask about her at all. You don't ask. Please don't play me. You don't ask. You just tell her your intentions, like straight. We're going to be in a monogamous relationship, right? And I'm not going to play you or do anything funny like that. I just expect monogamy to be the front of the relationship. I expect us to look out for one another. I expect us to give one another. I expect us to really invest in one another. And that's basically it. That's all we're going to do. If you have anything that you would like to add to this, let's add it and clear it and put it onto the table now. Because unfortunately, right, life is so short and I don't want to be waking up with regrets a couple of months or a year later. So let's talk about it now. Let's iron it out now. Let's treat each other well. Are we clear, Ndapandula? And she's like, yes, daddy. Straight. And then you go back to being your normal Leo. Yeah, no, like, yeah, you go back to being your normal Leo. You get Ndapandula flowers, you look out for her, you know, you go to the library, you go to the cancer ward, you know, for her mom. You do all the things that you've always been doing. You don't have to keep up with the facade of bad. You just needed, it's just, you had to go to war once.
It's like Leo came from being toxic, me? Mm-hmm. I can't.
What are you afraid of? What is it? You set the rules.
Is this position of bestie?
Nah, you people play too much. Like, what is this? Why are you guys besties with girls that are using you people? Guys don't even see it. Hey, you are the one that's walking people home 2 o'clock at night after you go and get them from getting smashed. Smelling like rubber. The guy can't even escort her. Can you please eat outside? Can I get Japan lamb? On that tilap. What happened to Kane? You know, she waka tuano mbele.
Hey. In a very dress.
Hey. Or thinking now go the kegumbo because you know bochochos are bochochos. Yeah, I'll be wearing a white hoodie. Like the person that she's giving all this to, why is he not the one that's taking her home? Don't that rock, I'm so drunk, brah. Take rumbere ne. While you are carrying her bag. Ha! Hey. Change. Change, guys. And you haven't seen a naked woman in 2 years. The closest female relationship you have are your siblings. Hey! Now you're also starting to check your siblings a little skew because, you know, you may be because you have been out of the market for such a long time. Maybe Ndina likes me. No. No eating at home. Go and eat outside. We don't play here at home. Go and play outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aina, does that sound familiar? Bestie. Yeah. You guys are receiving the things. Hmm.
Basically,
using people's sons. Yeah. There's no reason for you guys to be besties with these girls. Not unless she's ugly and you don't want her. But if you want her and she's cute, there's no reason to be bestie.
So just get straight to the point.
Get straight to the point. Stop playing. Get straight to the point.
Okay, yeah.
You ask her out, she rejects you, you turn the tables around. You ask her out, she says yes, you set some rules.
Be the dominant one that she wants.
It's a. You'll be the only man in Namibia that has ever said, Kucha, listen, I expect monogamy here. Because all of them say things, don't cheat on me. Bro! Don't say things that other people have said. You said, I expect monogamy here. You look out for me, I look out for you. This is a partnership that can take us far. If we work on it, if we fix our flaws, if we grow together. So let's take it from there.
Hopefully she's not Dalala.
Hopefully she's what?
Hopefully she's not Dalala.
Well, I'm sure for a young man of your caliber, you wouldn't be interested in a Dalala someone.
I really would not.
Yeah. So I don't think she'll be Dalala. And if she is Dololo, then the misjudgment is from you. Then you are the problem here. Because what is it? Why are you looking at Dololo people? That's like Aina looking at an ugly neck. Like she just doesn't like that. Like, I just, your face must just go with what I want in life. And right now, it's just not giving. I know, already received the text. I just never expected you to be like, so this is how you really view me. Is that why you don't want to have sex? Because Kanti the whole time. I'm busy with exams, I'm studying. Gate we don't get a future young petu. Kanti, she's just dodging balls.
Yeah.
Bruh. Yeah. She's just dodging every day. Like my grandmother is very strict. Dada is very small. Dada is very small. I have to be at home. Like, hey.
You are sending me to sleep early.
Why are you going to sleep early? I sent you nice clips there about nurses.
I need to tell
you. You need to change and go and think about your life choices. I bet you you've got a paper there and you were doing your body count. You're like, yeah, ne?
Bye.
Body count. You guys must be very careful with these body count things.
Yeah, I'm out.
You're out there? You can't be out. You are our plug. You are the airtime. You can't be out. May I wait for us to finish? You are our plug. How? I'm out. You can't be out. You're out when we see, when we say you're out. But wait for us to finish talking. Our seconds. Mana from heaven. Yeah. That's why you must always be careful on how many people that you are dating in a year. I know it doesn't look like much because it looks like it's many months.
Because of this, of spiritual things?
No, it's because of body count. If you don't want to have a high body count, you have to either learn to tolerate people, in a relationship. Learn to go through the relationship instead of just surrendering, or just abstain from relationships completely. Go and make your money, eat your money, and then you can start a relationship. There, you talk a skrufane by a different kind of gender, because there, which are a different kind of class and criteria, because all of them will want to marry you because they want to eat your money. Or there will be young ones that are gold diggers that want to eat your money. It's nice to go with your boyfriend from varsity all the way to big, big, big life. It's nice. But the truth is that if you keep being unhappy with what you are settling with, right, then you are just unnecessarily entertaining people in your house that are making it dirty. For starters, I don't even know why you're dating a student. Yeah. That is the one that's also going to pop up now in your mind when you go to sleep. You ask yourself, yeah, but I don't even like this. Like, to be honest, I don't even know why I'm here. I don't like this.
All right, guys, that was my advice, you know, for my children. But on a good day, I'm like one of those nice aunties that give you like solid. Okay, but the advice is solid. At the end of the day, when we look at that body count problem phenomenon, right? The body count problem comes from the amount of people you let into your life in a year. If you calculate in true honesty, a person that has at least 3 lovers in a year, right? Count 3 lovers times 10 years of dating. Yeah, times 10 years of dating. That's 30. 30. 3 lovers a year. So it's better for you to tolerate and go through relationships and then, you know, at least date for 2 years, because that gives you like okagepa, or just stay single. It's either you stay single or you date for 2 years or you date for a year. You date long enough to make sure that if the relationship is going to end, it must end somewhere here in February. Yeah, then you can get another boyfriend there in December, then you can sleep with him in January. So that means that's the whole year it was just one, and then the next year it's just one. Or you can accommodate the person with all their imperfections at least for 2 years, which gives you a good gap. You understand? So, I'm just saying. It's not that deep. I'm just saying, kuja, the body count thing, it's real. Body count is real. It's real. And it just, you just lose track of it, because 3-4 months, right? Sounds like a very long time. It's 120 days. In those 120 days, you heal from whatever. And ladies and gentlemen, it's not every single relationship that requires healing. Not at all. It's not every single relationship that requires healing. So sometimes when somebody breaks up with another person, they can just move on with their lives because they were not vested in it. They were not into it like that. It was just something that was passing by. That's why next week this person can be in a whole serious relationship, and then they end up marrying the person that they went with. Because you were not a serious relationship, and that is what it is. That's it. So take care of yourselves. Take care of yourselves in that light. Take care of yourself in that light, young girls and boys. Take care of yourself. And also, for you boys that are out there playing bestie to these chicks that are just using you for the no money that you are having, because all the money is coming from your parents, for the no money that you are having, and apparently you are bestie, you're the one that's carrying the books, you are the one that's also buying lunch, you are also buying airtime, you are buying data, you are doing assignments, you are helping them study, you ain't even getting no bam bam. Like, no. You can do this to you can do those things, ne, to someone you don't like. If you feel like you don't like this person in a romantic way and they are more like a sister, you can do those things. But if you are having an ounce of I want this person. And I'm not talking about just pata-pata, right? I'm talking about really genuinely liking this person, but this person is not giving you a chance. Leave it. Stop being people's besties. You're not here to bestialize things, like, no. Ache! No, my dear. How? Like, wasting a good face. Wasting a good face on someone that can't see you. Stop that. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow maybe I just want to be a little bit, riled up. I'll see you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and good night to you.